to be able to stand here and feel the little lump in my stomach and to feel the nervousness and to be okay with it, you know, that's, to me, that's the biggest gift I've gotten here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, whenever I was drinking, whenever I was out running through the world, running into everything and everyone, and not giving two shits what happened or if I hurt anybody or what I felt like, and just doing everything I could to mask it all, to run from it, to not live, really, through putting alcohol in my body, life wasn't worth living. It was,
sorry, dude. Good.
Thanks. I came into AA and, from jail. Christmas, 4 years ago, I got money from my grandma and my aunt and got home Christmas Day Eve and asked my mom if she could take me to a town nearby because I wanted to hang out with friends. And she was like, no, I know what you're doing, Dylan. It's done. I'm done doing anything for you. This is your life. Learn how to live it. And it was the first time she ever stood up like that before, and she put her foot down it and didn't pick it back up this time. And I tried all the old games of, you know, well, every 3 seconds that you refuse to take me to drink, I'm gonna punch a hole in the wall. You know, I'm gonna rip the banister all off the basement steps and kick the dryer over it. And I did that completely sober. For the longest time, I blamed alcohol for how I felt and what I did and all the nasty things, nasty actions I took. And at that moment, I realized that, maybe there's a deeper problem. Maybe I need help. Long story short, my mom moved out of her own house to get away from me because she was scared. She didn't know what I was going to do. She didn't know what I was capable of anymore. And my mom was the one person who was always there. Was the one person who always cared about me. You're good. It can stay there. She always loved me. And in that moment, in those 3 weeks, she did, she took the ultimate act of love, and that was to, let me go. From there, I did the whole jail thing, had the amazing spiritual experience in jail. You know, I was good, you know, like I'm sober now, I feel better, put some weight on. I'm just going to go to AA and do my counseling thing and get a job and a car and a girlfriend and life was going to be good now, you know, because I don't have the desire to drink alcohol. And 9 months went by and I got the job and I got the girlfriend and I got all those things. I got all these friends in AA now and we're going on trips together and we're going on vacations together, and like I had everything I ever thought I needed to be happy, to shut those voices off where I could just be content and calm and good with life. And really it was just my what I see now is it was just my first experience with ego, with the egotistical, I'm better than you, I can say the right words and get what I want because you're a nice person. Before in my life, it was all guilt and shame and remorse and self-pity and poor me, look at me, my life sucks. You know, you should help me. You should give me money. You know, this, that, and the other. What ended up happening is I had to go back to jail to take care of a past DUI. And I was on work release. And I'd like to say at this point, my conception of Alcoholics Anonymous was if I just go to meetings and tell people what I'm struggling with and get it out, that I was going to be okay. And that's what this thing was all about, just staying sober. That if you just don't drink, your life is going to get better. So I'm in work release. I'm going back and forth. Now all of a sudden I don't have all these friends. I don't have all. I'm not going to all these meetings. I'm not. The girlfriend's not there. You know. All this outside stuff is gone, and it's just me. What ended up happening is one day at work, a guy showed up with some alcohol, and that thing happened again in my head, where it was like, oh, I think I want some of that. Like, that looks good. Like, they're not going to catch me. You know, I can get away with it. No one's going to know. Oh, but you're an alcoholic. You can't do that. Stop. Don't. And every part of me fought for about 2 days in my head of, this is wrong. Not doing it is right. So don't. And eventually that stuff didn't come up. And I picked up and put it in my body. And I spent the next 3 months going to work, drinking, and going back to jail and physically sobering up, wondering why I did it. Why am I doing this? And I don't want to do it anymore. With every ounce of my power, I said no. And it failed me every time. And today that is the most, I'm so grateful for that experience today, because it showed me what I was really dealing with. That there was nothing I could do, and there was nothing outside of me that I could hold on to tight enough that was going to keep me away from drinking again, that was going to shut those voices off and give me peaceful a peaceful and content life. Now I didn't figure that out right away. I got out of jail. Didn't tell anybody that any of this had happened. My reasoning was, well, I think in step 9 they tell me that if it's going to harm other people, that I don't need to tell them. Like, I don't need to do anything about it. So, like, it'll upset my girlfriend if she finds out I relapse. So I'm just going to let God remove it from me. Three months went by where I was going insane, wondering why this guilt, this thought kept popping up in my head. I was going to meetings, talking about the big book, talking how great, you know, things were. And it was all an act. It was all face. It was all how I was trying to act, how I wanted other people to view me. And it failed. One day at work, I couldn't deal with it anymore. And I just, like, broke down and was like, God, what do I do? Completely at an end. Because everything I tried, going to meetings, talking to other alcoholics, none of it wasn't availing me anything. When it really came down to it, I was still, I was still unhappy in life. I was still living on the edge, and the immediate thought came, get honest. So I went home and I called my mom and I called my dad and I called my sponsor and I went over to my girlfriend's house and told her, and everybody just freaked out. It was like the exact results. And then I was like, oh, I knew this was going to happen. Oh my God. Now, my whole life is destroyed. I ruined my life. I shouldn't have said anything. And then I had a moment by myself. And even though everything was in chaos about me, you know, in chaos about me, I was calm. I felt okay with myself. I felt some little bit of contentment, of calmness. First time in a long time. I remember my sponsor, when I told him, he was like, "Dylan, you're an alcoholic. Like, that's what happens when we don't look at the real issue, when we don't see the truth, when we don't seek a power greater than ourselves. Like, you're nothing special, man." You know, life continued, and life continued to be hard. I was still trying to manage everything. Everybody who I came across, every person I met at a meeting, I felt like I had to be a certain way. Like, well, I'm in AA, so I need to be a good sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I need to smile, and I need to laugh, and I need to talk about the steps, and I need to talk about the big book, and if I do that, then someday I'm gonna get this thing that everybody talks about, this life beyond my wildest dreams. I'm gonna be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, like, and for me, it took a bottom, while drinking and while going to meetings. You know, that whole relationship thing, without the 12 steps in my life, without a power, without some truth in my life, I don't regret it today, probably because it was the biggest driving force behind my desperation to ask for help and say, "I don't know. I know I don't know." You know, before it was always like, "Well, I don't know, but I'm going to figure it out." Or you know, "Eventually I'm going to be able to grasp with enough intellectual power this Alcoholics Anonymous thing where I'm going to be happy." And I really didn't understand what I was dealing with. I didn't know myself. I was still sleepwalking through life, just as much as I was when I was out drinking and drugging, just in a different way, just in a new, better way, right? I was being polite. I was opening doors for people. I was saying the right stuff. So now I'm better. Really, nothing changed. I'm still a selfish, self-centered, self-driven, egotistical, feared-up fool. I remember I got to a place where all I could really pray was, "God, please put someone in my life that's gonna bring me closer to you and help me be of better service to other people." Because like, I was at my end. I tried everything. I tried everything except asking someone to take me through the big book and to thoroughly do the work and take the action. And eventually some guy came up to a podium like this and shared his story, and he didn't share like me. He said, "Today I feel like God has moved me to share my experience with steps 10, 11, and 12. And that was really weird. I was like, "Yo, who's this guy? Like, what does he think he's doing? He should be telling me like what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Like, he should be telling me about when he was born and how his childhood was and how shitty high school was, and then, you know, how he tried to go to college but failed out, and then his drinking got really bad, and, you know, he got married and got a divorce and had a kid, and he doesn't know the kid anymore, and You know, like, and then how shitty life, and then he was living on the streets and didn't have any money, and then he went to jail and came to AA. Like, that's what I should be hearing right now. And he's talking about watching himself. He's talking about watching for fear and selfishness, and that whenever he sees it, he steps aside and closes his eyes and asks God to take that from him, that taking it from him would be witness to God's power, not his. And I was it just I never I guess my ears the ears of my mind were always open, never the ears of my heart. And I guess for that day, the ears of my heart were open, and it blew my mind. So me and this guy started talking, and he's from Frederick, Maryland. I'm from Perry County, Pennsylvania. So that's like hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes away. So what ends up happening is we end up getting together to work through these steps. And in step one, I always thought that, you know, I always understood that if I drank, that I lost control over who I am. And, you know, I never understood that when I was stopped, that I didn't know I didn't know how long my fuse was. Like, maybe I'll stay stopped for a day, an hour, 2 weeks, 3 months. Hell, maybe I'll stay dry 40 years in the program and blow my brains out. And I didn't get that. I think I had the experience of that, but that experience in jail where I would go, where I would read the big book and go to meetings in jail and pray and plead and beg God for help on the way to work, not to pick it up and then pick it up anyway. You know, my power wasn't enough, no matter how much I brought, no matter how hard I tried, no matter how many guilty, shameful things I threw at myself. I did it anyway. And realizing that was not a was not a freeing thing. It was a scary thing, because that meant that I wasn't going to get my answer or my solution in any way that I knew how to. It didn't mean that I could learn how to stay sober. It didn't mean that I could read the big book enough times to stay sober. It meant that some kind of power. I needed some kind of divine experience to stay sober. And then my sponsor told me that I couldn't even will that to be. And I was like, well, shit, man. Like, I don't know what to do here. And he was like, yeah, right. That's the answer. You don't know. And I was just like, wow, like, this is weird. Everything's backwards. And he was like, yeah, it is. Isn't that awesome? And no, it's not. It's scary. Like, you just threw me onto a different planet and told me to live the rest of my life out. You know, but it... And I finally got to take a look at what was going on in my head and the God of reason and trying to figure. That used to be my word. I'm gonna figure this out. Like, I figure that this and this is gonna happen. You know, step one scared the shit out of me. And step two kind of gave me some hope, but kind of just told me that I didn't know even more things, like that my human resources wouldn't work even like to another degree. You know, that I couldn't figure God out with my mind. That I couldn't understand God to a level where I would start experiencing Him. It took the abandonment or the setting aside of those things. Like, okay, maybe, but I'm gonna have this open mind and may, you know, let God come to me. And that was all so weird, but it all came from step one. It all came from that hopeless, the end where I knew I didn't know how to fix my life. I tried it all and it all failed. You know, I knew I couldn't come sit in meetings and listen to people speak at the podium and fix my life. That's a big part of my life today, but it's not what keeps me sober. It was part of the journey. But it didn't avail me any results by itself. On page 25, that part where it talks about the fourth dimension of existence and having a life beyond our wildest dreams, I never really heard that before when I read the book. And it was so weird for me to go from, oh, well, there's absolutely nothing you can do to get this, and there's no amount of brain power you can use to find God. But yet, you're going to have a life beyond your wildest dreams. You're going to be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence and have, you know, peace and contentment and beauty strewn throughout every moment. But I sought that out. I was like, okay, all right, like, you know, see, we seek this with the desperation of a drowning man. Like, I lived my whole life 3 inches underwater with my arms flailing and 10 people trying to pull me out. I mean, saying, no, I'm waiting for the other guy. No, I think I'll swim here. Just give me a second. One more minute. When all I had to do is like let go of that delusion and grab a hold. And you know, and step one and two brought me to step three. You know, this big decision. I gotta turn my life over to God. Like, oh my gosh, like, so you tell me, like, okay, I'm not God. Nobody else is God. Nobody else can give me God. I can't figure God out with my mind. But now I got to turn my life over to Him? Oh, my, geez. You know, I thought, like, that third step had to be the moment where, like, light started coming from places where it wasn't supposed to. And, like, I would grow 2 more inches and gain 20 pounds. Like, whoo! And it wasn't like that. It was more of a commitment. It was really step... The decision kind of came to me sitting down with my sponsor. Step three for me was about getting to know my selfishness a little bit and how I... lived my life and how most people in the world live their lives. And to understand that a little bit, you know, that I was constantly playing, I'm constantly in this game of life, right? And, but see, where I'm not being a team player. I'm trying to play like, team leader, you know, of the world, where anybody I ran into, if I just put on the right, you know, facade, I was gonna get what I needed out of the situation because I needed something. That, you know, I was the actor on stage playing director, and if things didn't go just as I wanted it to go, it was the end of the world. And they never went as I thought they should go. Right? The world was always against me. The whole world was always in the wrong. It was the teachers in school is the reason why I got bad grades, because they don't know how to teach. You know, it was the my boss at work. It was that, you know, he's an asshole. That's why I got fired. You know, like, why isn't it cool that I show up 20 minutes late 3 days? Like, I was blacked out sitting in a car in a random driveway. Like, come on, man. Like, 20 minutes isn't too bad. You know, I remember my mom picking me up one time. I worked at a motorcycle shop and was trying to stop drinking and wasn't. And she picked me up with her best friend from high school. And right before she was to get there, I drank like a half a bottle of vodka. And she was really embarrassed, and her friend didn't know how to act because, you know, I was like 19 years old at the time, and I don't know, it was not a good situation. And anyway, long story short, we got home, and my mom pulled out this letter because she couldn't, she couldn't bring herself to say what was in her heart. And she pretty much told me what a wonderful person I was on the inside, and how that this person, this facade that I'm playing, is all fake, and that it's not really me. And that, you know, that I have all this potential and I can be this wonderful person. And I pretty much told her, Mom, I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. I'm never going to amount to anything. And even if I were to learn how to stay sober, I wouldn't want to live your life. What? Go to work, come home, eat, watch TV, go to sleep, go to work, come home, eat, watch TV, go to sleep. And I'm like throwing this in her face as she's bawling her eyes out, right? I'm putting on this, I'm playing this game to try to really fight against the truth and to keep that facade up. Keep that stage character built up to where I think he needs to be so he can be okay in life and be safe and not feel hurt and not cry and not get upset. And it failed me. You know, I walked back inside Mr. Tough Guy and bawled my eyes out of my room and wondered what was wrong with me. Why am I like this? Why did I just do that? I know she's right. Why can't I admit it? I'm an alcoholic. And to see that, to see through that, to see that's my nature. And then the very next page for them to tell me that I have just as much power over removal of that as I do removal of the obsession to drink. They just threw me on the ground again, you know. Just threw me to my knees. You know, see, in my head, I feel like I need to build myself up, right? It's my job to be a tough guy. It's my job to manage my life. It's my job to run the show, you know, and through that process, through that breaking down of, you know, the ego, it was bringing me to a place where I could surrender, where I could let go of that, and that would just—it was bringing me to a place where that would just happen, you know, and that happened because of a power greater than myself. My first four step. I wrote down all the big people in my life. Like, I had resentments against my mom and my dad, and people I worked with, people I worked for in the past, other family members. Not a whole lot of people, but the real main thing is I had a lot of guilt and shame. Like, I wasn't the person to say, to really point the finger. I did, but there was a whole lot of, like, everything's my fault. You know, woe is me. Like, I knew at that point that I was the cause of all of it somehow. I just didn't know how to make sense of it, right? It was all just like a bowl of spaghetti. Like, what is going on? I don't understand it. And I was able to sit down and chicken scratch some stuff on some paper, through the instructions out of the book. And, still I didn't find a lot of clarity through that. I didn't really see the principle by myself, but I got it down on paper. And by getting it down on paper, I could sit down with my sponsor and we could talk about it. And I think that for me, step four allowed me to break down that stage character that I was talking about, that I could start to learn to recognize when I was acting, when I was putting on the facade, when I was playing tough guy. Therefore, I was able to know that I wasn't going to do anything about it. You know, I know that at this point, I know self can't be rid of self, because I just spent the last year and a half of my life with every ounce of my power to force to be a good person, and it still failed me. So I could say, God, please help me see the truth. You know, something simple like that. Or I could just close my eyes and focus on my breathing for a minute. You know, at work or wherever. But I remember this last time I sat down to do a fifth step. I was going to this big book meeting, and at this meeting, there was a guy there that, you know, someone would share, and then he would share, and then another person would share, and then he would share, and it was like, you know, he was Mr. AA. Like, this guy was telling people, giving people answers for his life, and I was like, that's not how it's done. You know, that's not... That is egotistical and selfish, and that's bad. He shouldn't be allowed to do that. We sat down to do that fifth step, and my sponsor was like, Dylan, you just want to be that guy. And I was just like, whoa. Damn. You're right. I'm like, I do want to be that guy. It's like coming here. Jeff invited me to speak, and I was like, you guys got a podium, and you record it. You're going to give me water, and you're going to tell me where the bathroom is, and you're going to give me this fancy timer and stuff. Like, yeah, all right. Now I'm getting up there in the ranks of Alcoholics Anonymous. which is, again, part of that delusion. That's all bullshit. It's not real. It exists up here. For me, a huge, huge part of my spiritual growth, a huge part of seeing truth is the practices of steps 10, 11, and 12. In that time before I went to jail and relapsed, my idea of AA was, well, in Dauphin County Prison, I had a spiritual experience. And I now know that the past and the future don't exist, and all that's real is the present. So now I just need to practice 10, 11, and 12 every day, and I'm going to be good. It didn't work. Through going out and taking action on those first 9 steps, something happened. There was this indescribable feeling that I can't, any word that I would attach to it would just discredit it. And it's pointless to really talk about anyway, because, you know, no words that I can say are going to give it to anybody else. That I had to have that experience, and that experience to me is best described as we have entered the world of the Spirit. And it says our next function is to grow in effectiveness and understanding of living in that world. So now that I finally found some separation from self, that I finally found some moments where I'm not playing the director, where I'm not running the show, where I can pray and I can feel this presence of something greater than myself, now I need to learn how to live that way. Because I found that if I just like, woo, hey, there's God, now I'm good, now I can do what I want, it doesn't work out that way, that my life, I start to manage my life again, and my life becomes unmanageable, and my head goes crazy, and who knows when that little switch is going to go off in my head that says, drink, drink, just drink, and then powerless, I can't shut it off, maybe I'll die. Maybe I'll be my dad and be 60 years old, living in a trailer, shitting in garbage bags, dying, wanting to kill himself every day. You know, maybe I won't die. Maybe I'll just live in hell. And I think that's the beautiful thing here is like my inability to manage my life forces me to let this force, this power, do it for me. Today, I can go out behind my house and I can sit in the grass, or maybe not now while it's cold, but in the summer times, it's one of my favorite things to do. I can sit in the grass and close my eyes and, listen to the birds and the cars going by and, just be. And be happy and smile and have tears run down my face and what I feel. And that's thanks to God's power, God's love, and God's way of life, not mine. That's thanks to God coming into other people's hearts and lives in a miraculous way as He came into mine. Today I don't have the super fast car and the super hot girlfriend and the super awesome job and the super awesome house. No, actually I just got my license back after not having it for 5.5 years. And I live at home with mom and work at a sawmill and bust my ass every day for a couple bucks. I guess I've come to realize that's not what makes life. That was my before. I thought that's what made my life, made me who I was. Today, I've experienced that I don't live my life. That I am life. That I'm not on a journey. That I am the journey. And that what's going on inside here is what's important or not important. In step 12, just recently, actually, I've had three guys ask me to sponsor them, and the one guy, it was first time in rehab, first time in a halfway house, first AA meeting, and I picked him and his buddies up and I just like walked up to him after the meeting and started like bullshitting about, like how I grew up and how I felt a little bit because I knew it was new and started talking about like the hopelessness of my life without the realization in step one and just, blah, blah, blah. And he's just, his eyes are just wide open and like he's... And I'm watching him and I'm like, wow, he's really like staring at me. And like, I'm talking and all of a sudden I find myself like watching the conversation and like afterwards he lays it all on me, his whole life and everything. And he's like, dude, this is my first AA meeting. 'Cause I didn't know any of that when I started talking to him. And I'm just like, oh, And he's like, "Who's your sponsor? I need his phone number." And I'm just like, "Well, he lives in Frederick, Maryland, man. I doubt he's going to be able to come up and work with you." And he's like, "Well, then give me your phone number. You know, we need to start doing these 12-step things, whatever they are. Like, dude, like, you just told me about, like, how I feel inside that I've never been able to tell anybody before. And, like, all this weird shit. And I feel all fuzzy inside and I want to cry and I don't know what's wrong with me." And I'm just like, "Dude, that's crazy. Like, I just told you, like, how I felt, you know, like, before the 12 steps and stuff. And, you know, like, that's just what happened. That's just what occurred in my life." And, like, that's... To go from punching holes in the wall at my mom's house to standing outside in the cold talking to this... this person about life and feelings and emotions and powers greater than ourselves is crazy. I cannot use my brain to tell you from exactly what I thought and exactly what happened from point A to point B. Like, there's something out there that's bigger than myself that makes that happen. And those are... I had someone ask me last night, actually. You know, she was like, "You shared, like, what you're doing, and you're doing all this stuff for your family, and you sponsor people, and how great that is, and, you know, you go to a lot of meetings," and, like, she was like, "What do you do for yourself?" I was like, "Well, actually, that is what I do for myself. The self in me, that's what I do for it. That's like my medication I take." And she, this wasn't a person in the program, but she just, I don't know, just when they talk about, you know, rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, life beyond your wildest dreams. You know, I was a hopeless, broke, insane, crazy lunatic. And today, to be able to stand in front of a group of people without, like, a red face and sweat and sweaty palms and, like, shaking and, like, you know, not saying there's anything wrong with that, because there's not. But, like, to me, that's a demonstration that this thing works. That there's some kind of power out there greater than myself. Today, currently in my life, my major problem, problems really don't exist, I just make them up, is, which, you know, then realizing that, it's kind of like, well, then maybe I don't have any problems, and maybe it's not an issue, so maybe I don't even need to think about it, and it's just going to take care of itself. You know, maybe God will do for me what I can't do for myself. If I just stop making problems up in my head. It's funny because I was really going to tell you a problem. I guess that's how it works. You know, that girl that I dated for 2.5 years in the program, you know, I ended up through the steps, through inventory work, through looking at myself, my motives, through watching for fear and self, I was able to find clarity and say, "Hey, I think I need to move on." And it was a very hard, again, made up in my head, experience, emotional experience, scary, very scary experience, because I was like, "Well, what if she would drink? What if she, like, it would be my fault? You know, oh, I can't go to the same meetings anymore because we might see each other." She ended up finding a bottom, a low, and getting a new sponsor and going through the big book. And now sponsors women, and me and her talk often and are very close. Like, to me, that's just like, that's crazy. That doesn't happen in my life. My life. What a beautiful gift. All of it, though. The good and the bad. Like, I wouldn't be standing here today if it wasn't for punching those holes in the wall at my mom's house. If it wasn't for stealing money from her. If it wasn't for taking her car out for joy rides. If it wasn't for, you know, getting arrested and having bad relationships and all that bad stuff. Like, I have to have that to have what I have today. It's what brought me to the first step. So, that's all I got.
All right, the group would also like to remind anyone in need of a sponsor to please see someone after the meeting. Would anyone who has working knowledge of the 12 steps please raise your hands? Thank you. Please help us close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Hey.
Hi, Lauren.
How are you?
Doing well.
You don't like
cold hands.
I know, I'm sorry. It's okay. Yeah, I'm just going to do a little shoulder roll.
I understand.
Yeah.
Me too.
Feels good. Dylan, will you take us out with the Lord's Prayer, please?
Yes, I would love to. Let's take a moment of silence to consider our day.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back. The works of you this day.
Just stay.
All right, Lauren, I will see you next week.
Okay, sounds good. Have a good night.
You too. You as well.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, man, don't bang me, right?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Absolutely. Good to meet you.
So, small world.
Yeah.
Because either we've met, we have a lot of close friends, mutual friends.
Okay.
Right. Mr. Neil.
Okay, yeah.
Hi, guys. and Jake. The Kilo Fisher.
Yeah, Jake Neal.
Yeah,
I know Jake.
Yeah.
From the very beginning.
Wow.
Wow.
It's like I texted him, I was like, I bet I know him. I was like, oh yeah, I know.